Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 5th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. New York City Beer Week is over, and we're here for a whole new show post-Beer Week. We've got Ben Granger from Beercraft and James Tai, the Beer Acolyte, to talk about his new project in India. All right, so thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. If you want to learn more about it, you can check out the Beer Cloud to find where to buy good beers and take the Good Beer 100 test. Check it out, greatbrewers.com. All right, we're here. Ben, how was Beer Week for you?
Awesome. 7 days of solid drinking. Nothing can be wrong with that.
It was fun as heck. And James?
Yeah, it destroyed me. It was it was a very painfully fun week. I loved it.
So that's what we do every day and every week, and Beer Week, you did it double.
Yeah, right. It's Beer Week every week at Beercraft.
Heck yeah. Well, I want to talk about what you're doing first, Ben, because you're doing something cool. You're actually putting in a brewery into your successful beer store and beer bar.
Yeah. We're putting in, it's actually pretty much in at this point. We're just waiting on licensing. We put in a one-barrel system in the back of the shop. We have 8 barrels worth of fermentation space. We're keeping it pretty low-key. In the sense that we're not going to give up any of our regular draft lines. We're just going to add 2 more or 3 more and just put Beercraft beer on there. Joe Tracy is going to be our brewer. He's a very talented brewer. That's that. We're just going to add one more facet to the business. We already are a beer bar, bottle shop, sandwich shop. Now we're just going to add brewery to the list as well. It's going to be, like I said, it's going to be kind of low key.
Do you want to talk about that license?
Sure.
Because I've never heard of it before. You told me about it a couple months ago.
Yeah, it's called a restaurant brewer's license. I believe it was created in the 80s in response to the growth of brew pubs in New York City and some pushback from some of the larger breweries. What it basically does says is that you can make a certain amount of barrels every year. You can't bottle for resale. In other words, I couldn't bottle it and keg it and sell it to Jimmy's 43 for resale. I can only just really sell it out of the shop, in pints and growlers and things like that. You're only allowed so many of them. It's a pretty straightforward license, It's a funny license because it really fits for us in particular, but I don't think it, is one of those things that applies or really works for, the aspiring, brewery owner. You would really want a brew pub's license then because you're just kind of very limited to, production volume and things of that nature. But for a beer bar or a bottle shop that was looking to kind of like find that next cool thing to do, yeah, that's where it is. It's right there.
It sounds great. Well, I've been drinking your homebrew for a number of years.
Yeah.
So I know you know how to make good beer. And is Joe the guy that works in your shop already?
Yeah.
Tall guy with frizzy hair.
Yeah, tall, crazy looking dude.
He walks around carrying kegs all the time.
Yeah. Not only does he look crazy, but he's actually really crazy.
Perfect.
He kind of fits the look. But he makes great beer. He makes some really, what's really going to be good about this is, we're not going to be tethered to kind of any flagship beer because we're going to be so small. So we'll have the ability to just put on a pale ale, and the pale ale recipe can be different every single run. But we'll also have the ability to make, one barrel of sour, weird, funky, bizarre, strange, smoked, salted, herbed, spiced, etc., etc., etc. Oaked. I can keep going.
I know you can. I'm looking for and James, we got a special guest in studio guest, Heidi from Moe's Fund, Mongolista Farm. So
she's
here hanging out trying to get to know more about Heritage Radio Network. And I can tell you, if you're listening, you should join and become a member, heritageradionetwork.org. All right. Jack Inslee's in the studio tonight. He's our head, whatever, producer of the network, and he's engineering tonight, which is always a treat. So if you heard good music, he's spinning back there. All right. And James, you know, tell us a little bit what you're doing. You're invested in a brewery in India.
Oh, that's right.
So we're going from like hyper small, you know, beer bar, beer store, mini brewery to a huge venture,
right,
in another country.
Pretty much the wild, wild South Asia West. So we're doing a brew pub concept in the city of Pune, which is, I would say, it's probably the seventh largest city in India. I've equated it before to something like an Atlanta of India. A lot of intellectual capital, you know, there are multinationals there, disposable income, so it seems like it makes a lot of sense to start something in Pune.
So if I took a map of India and I said, throw a dart at Pune, you could hit it?
Depends on how close I was to the map. Yeah.
Let's talk a little about India, because India, you know, it was an English colony, and then it became independent, but for a long time, the names of the cities were in English.
Right.
So what have they done? Restored their names to a traditional?
Yeah, they have, but I'm actually, you know, not being South Asian, not being of Indian descent, I've talked to a bunch of South Asian acquaintances and likes, and they really didn't have a problem with the English version of it. I mean, I referred to cities as Mumbai, and they'll just call them Bombay.
And what was Pune?
I've only known it as Pune.
Pune.
Yeah. And there we are.
It's not like I'm a freshman in high school in Latin class, and some of the words that when you say, you know, they sound like dirty words if you say them a certain way.
That's because you have a dirty mind, Jimmy.
I do. That's why I invited Heidi in, because Heidi is also going to talk a little bit about tell us about Mongolista Pigs. Because we like to talk about food and beer pairing, too, and this is a good group right here.
Well, of course everyone knows pork goes really well with beer. But, of course, at this point, Mongolista is Eastern European, so we're totally talking about a different part of the world. But I think when it comes to thinking about pork and beer, Mongolista is going to be the perfect way to do it, because it's deep, it's dark, it's rich, super amazing fat, and that's what you want when you're drinking a really great beer. You want something where the beer is going to cut through that amazing fat and still leave incredible flavor.
So with Ben from Beercraft, who is a chef as well as a home brewer and shop owner, and you, let's put together a couple improvised beer menus. Like pick a cut and a dish that you guys would make with your most fun Mongolista, and Ben will pair it with a beer.
Oh, he's no! I start belly, just super fatty. I mean, oh, he's gonna start talking already. Look at him.
like belly, like we cured it and hung it, and then
no. Everyone does
belly, like just like braised belly.
Braised belly.
Just braised belly. Braised belly, like spiced, like ginger, clove, spice, or braised belly spice, like, you know, thyme, rosemary, garlic. Like, are we talking? What are we talking here?
How about both?
Okay, so for like, you know, that kind of ginger, clove, a touch of sweetness, that kind of like rich braised belly that often gets done. I would definitely go with something in the way of Belgian beer. I would even probably do something with a little bit of tartness, maybe something that's got maybe even a Loup Pepe Creek,
mm-hmm.
or we could even, actually what would do well, probably best, is the beer we're drinking right now, which is Jaeger-Hopke Extra.
Oh, this one right here?
Yeah, it's a quad, but it's got a little bit of tartness to it. So, you know, it's gonna be rich enough to stand up to the fat of belly,
mm-hmm.
but it's got a touch of sourness that'll like actually kind of carve through that and balance it out
a little bit, actually. What I was thinking when I was drinking it. I was tasting how crisp and tart, but has some body to it. It's really going to work with specifically Mongolista pork, because you've got that gorgeous fat, but yet that huge amount of flavor from the meat.
You could probably braise it in this, and it would be outstanding.
Yeah. That would be amazing. Tart.
So you're saying that like something specific, like a real fatty pork, there are certain beers that will balance those flavors out?
Yeah,
compliment
you know, it's not a perfect, you know, it's not like a perfect algorithm there. It's more of like, okay, rich, fatty pork, but, you know, how are you cooking it? What other flavors are going into it? Because that's really going to affect. Like if you were to take and braise that belly and I don't know habaneros and galangal or ginger or you know or, and like a kind of jerk flavors, you know, it would be a completely different beer. Similar concept. You would need something with a little richness and something with a little dryness to it. But you know you would definitely take it up a little bit. You know. In a different direction.
Perhaps like a dark saison, maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a dark saison. Yeah. You know, like still having that roast, but having that bright yeasty thing, you know, that's that and still having the beer fairly dry, you know, like, absolutely.
And Heidi, at Most Fun Mangalista, have you guys done any programs where you've tried to pair pork with beer or work with breweries or chefs who are cooking with beer?
That's actually something we're looking to do more of. We've done random events in the past before I was actually a part of the farm. But I've always understood and really felt that beer and pork really do work so well together. And I really want to work with brewers and brew pubs to make these types of events happen and I think it's time to really make it start happening more often because they're a perfect match. They really are. Sometimes wines can be a little bit too light. Beer cleanses the palate. It cleanses, you know, the thirst, everything. And then you move forward and you just keep on eating, which is what you want to do.
Now, beer makes me thirstier sometimes. What did you say, James, before the show? What does beer do for me?
It stimulates you.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. What, doesn't pork as well sometimes?
Oh, yeah. All right. But, hey, thanks. So Most Fun Mangalista, you guys are out in Jersey, and you guys have a website?
Yeah, www.mostfund, I'm going to spell it, M-O-S as in Sam, E-F as in Frank, U-N-D.com.
And I'll give a shout-out. I first met the Most Fun guys at New Amsterdam Market, which is in the site of the old Fulton Fish Market, downtown Seaport, New York City. And they're fighting to save the Seaport. There's a big movement coming up that the Fulton Fish Market sat there for a long time empty. And New Amsterdam Market says, why don't you preserve it, turn it into a public market? I'm all for it. And
support
cool people,
local food.
You meet emerging food makers and everything. And that's cool. On the same note, talking to Ben, what I found in New York City Beer Week this year was the first time that most of the beers that I served at Jimmy's Number 43 were from new, small, local breweries. And we did a little tour with foodrepublic.com, and we went to visit you, 508 Gastro Pub Brewery in Manhattan, Bridge and Tunnel in Queens, and Rockaway Brewing in Queens. And not one of you guys is using any system larger than a two-barrel system.
Yeah.
And I love the experience of having guys self-deliver, so the brewer is actually bringing it to me. That's one of the great things about New York. I love the experience of each batch is different, and I feel like that's the new future in New York, and I'm really proud of you, man. I feel like you broke some new waves. So cheers to you, man. And what? So this is a beer you had on draft, and you brought it in a growler?
Yeah. This beer first came to us from Brian Ewing, which you know from 12%. And years ago, he actually, before he even imported this beer, he brought it to us and said, hey, I want to be an importer. What do you think of this beer? And we were like, holy crap, this is delicious. You should totally bring this. And then now he's like one of the most ridiculous importers in the city. And so we've recently started getting it in on draft. On draft, it's a little more tart. It's a little more funky. But it still retains that like that ruby richness that it's got. It's delicious. It's a great beer.
Well, this is really true. So it's tea. It's like it's tea apostrophe Gavre Hopte.
Yeah, it's a Belgian brewery that's got a, you know, there's a very long name with lots of consonants all together. All
right. Gavre. Let's make a toast. There's a couple other campaigns out there that we're behind. You can go to thegoodbeerseal.com and check it out. Our guy on Long Island, John Conzilla, Conzilla Farms. He has a Kickstarter campaign out there, which I know just hit their numbers this week. He's raising money to get a hop harvester because he wants to really grow his hop farm. You know him too, right?
Yeah, I met him. I met him for a hot minute, but he hit his numbers.
Hit his numbers, but it's still live. So you can go to goodbrewsteel.com.
That's totally awesome.
And another news story, Blind Bat, which is one of our favorite nano breweries on Long Island, he's also raising money. He's got a Blind Bat beer club where you can come in and join at a certain level, and he's going to expand. He's actually technically in his garage, mm-hmm. and he's going to expand to a separate location, which is great because he makes a lot of sour beers. He makes like a smoked sour wit.
Yeah, he makes some crazy stuff.
Have you had some Blind Bat at Beer
Craft? We've had some stuff float through early on, but I think most of it really gets gobbled up on Long Island, so it doesn't even make it to us. And he's so small that it all gets consumed right tight close to the brewery. You rarely see it. You even at bottle shares and things like that, you rarely see those beers come through. Rarely.
But we really impressed. I mean, that guys are going to crowdsourcing. You know, like Godzilla Farms last week. He came to Brewer's Choice, our event, and a bunch of writers put the word out and hit his numbers. People wrote to me. There's guys up in Albany trying to get together and buy a collective hop harvesting machine. Because, I mean, that's the big thing. With hops, you can't just pick them by hand.
Well, I mean, you could. It's really efficient. You can do anything you want. No, there's only a handful of hop harvesters
No one's holding
in the country.
Back, Ben.
Yeah. I'm going to get some stilts. I'm going to be the mobile hop harvester. No, but there's only a handful of hop harvesters in the country. In fact, I was watching a documentary on, I don't even know what channel, it was about growing hops, and it was primarily about the Pacific Northwest and the Midwest. And the guy cited his German-made, you know, hop harvester as one of two in the country, which, you know, I built most of the stuff we have at the shop, so the first thing I thought to myself was, wow, that must be nuts getting replacement parts for that thing. So, you know, that's kind of a big hurdle for these guys to overcome. It's going to be the harvesting and the processing of these hops. You know, you can go to maturity and have the most beautiful hops, but if you screw up the curing process, it's all is lost. All is lost.
But it's a good future for New York State farming too, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's an exciting time of beer right now with all these tiny little breweries popping up, and with these tiny little breweries we get more hop harvesters as the market grows, the demand for beer grows, the amount of breweries grow, then we have more, you know, hop growers and maltsters and so on. So it's pretty exciting right now. We're experiencing some pretty rapid growth. It's really cool.
Well, cheers to you, man, and good luck with the brewery license. And we'll be back in a few minutes. First, we're going to say James Ty and Avinash from the Independence Brewing Company in India. We'll be back at the next segment of Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Cheese Gainsburg by TaxStar on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're fortunate to be out here at Roberta's in Bushwick. Looking forward to probably we're going to have pork collar tonight paired with some kind of sour beer. Ben's pouring the Lou Pepe from Cantillon, which is like a huge collectible, awesome sour beer that you know, we talked about beer and food pairing earlier. Beer Craft getting its own beer brewing license, and now we've got we're going all the way to India. Our good friend James Ty is in the studio, and his buddy partner Avinash from Independence Brewing Company is on the line. Avinash, welcome to the show.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Great. So it's James and I and a couple other guests here.
Great.
So just tell us a little bit about your vision. I'll tell you what I know about what you've done. I know that is Hindu the language that you guys use, or is there another language?
So Hindi is the main language of India. India is not, it's a complex question, Jimmy, and there is no real one language. that really unites the entire country, other than actually English. I mean, you will see that it's actually very easy to get by in India these days. Most people are taught English very early. But Hindi is the national language of the country.
Okay. So I have a line from your website. It says, Yavasura or Yavira, it's the word for mild intoxicating drink made of barley.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a long tradition of brewing beer in India?
A long time ago. A long, long time ago. And, I mean, historically, this certainly was, you know, a malted beverage that people did consume. But we're talking, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And over time, certainly, you know, with British rule, with the cultural, societal set of beliefs, the religion, they've kind of changed what was accepted. And they moved away from beer. And the primary drink in India, you know, amongst, you know, my parents' generations, my grandparents' generation, was really scotch and whiskey. But India is going through this really remarkable change today where, you know, you've got 600 million people under the age of 21 years old. They're actually all growing up in an American and European-influenced society. That's amazing. And so people are going up to happy hour for the very first time, and they're looking for beers. And there's really none there. So that's really the fundamental reason why, you know, we thought, let's bring something better. Let's bring something to India where people can really see how varied, how truly complex, how amazing craft beer can be.
All right. Well, yeah, we've talked to different people from around the world. We've talked to guys from New Zealand, Lebanon, you know, and in Lebanon, there's a guy, he's the only craft brewer in Lebanon, and he's comparing himself all the time to Heineken-owned breweries. I mean, do you have anything to compare yourself to, or is it really just a blank slate where you
are? It's a blank slate. It really is a blank slate. I mean, when you look at the beer market in India, and I won't use specific brand names here, but, you know, let's call it the commoditized beer market, you know, your mainstream industrial lagers. That is really everywhere. And even just the drinking culture, it's not one where people casually sit down to savor a beer. It's a culture where if you're drinking beer, you're going to pound it. You're going to throw it back, and you're going for that alcohol content. And, you know, all the market statistics, you know, show that the strong beer category is really taken off in India for that purpose. We're really trying to change, you know, many things in India. You know, first and foremost is really just to show people that craft beer and the varieties that go along with it, you know, are so tremendous, so complex, so varied that it deserves to be savored. It deserves to be appreciated like any sort of gourmet food.
Avanish, let me ask you something, like the culture in India. So in general, is there, it's similar to a place around the world where people get together, they party, they celebrate, and they drink? Or is there, like, any type of prohibition in that country, or, you know, religions that keep people from drinking?
Yeah, no, there's one state where there's an active prohibition today, and that's a state called Gujarat. Interestingly to know, unofficially, they drink more than any other state in India. But officially, you know, it's there is prohibition there. And, but, you know, the black market is certainly a thing in India, and so there certainly are ways around the you know, what's officially restricted. But you're right. I mean, people do get together. They do go partying. They do like to drink, you know, even spirits. The spirit industry is growing dramatically. The wine industry is booming in India. So any category that you choose to look at within the Indian market that goes along with just their economic success, you know, everything's growing dramatically.
I'm going to ask James Ty. Now, so James, you've invested in this business.
That's right.
So tell us more about your perspective on this.
Well, the big reason why I invested in it, aside from, well, the big reason why I invested is because I thought that India was like a great market to get into in terms of it being, it's an emerging market, if not one that's already there. The growing percentage of disposable families with disposable income, households with disposable income, and a lot of the numbers made sense. But a big reason why I decided to get behind independence versus some other venture is that I think Avanish and Shaley are really great at what they do, and I believe in them strongly. Their expertise in their specific skill sets are just something that you can get behind.
So it's like investing 101. You trust in the CEO.
Absolutely.
You've been reading your books, James.
I've been trying. I've been trying.
And what about Ben? Ben's our serious beer guy. He's going to grill you, Avanish. Watch out. Until we get one of your beers in our hands and we can taste it, I really can't say much more about it.
Yeah,
but Ben has some questions.
Avanish, I understand you guys are going to be, you're going to be a 7-barrel system, brew pub style?
8.5-barrel, yep.
8.5-barrel. That's an odd number. But anyway. I never heard of an 8.5-barrel system. Anyways, so now I... Being a brew pub, you're going to have to brew kind of like the standard, like golden, brown ale, et cetera, for kind of a larger part of your market. Are you guys intending on, and I was speaking to James about this before the show, are you guys going to be brewing with kind of local ingredients? Or are you going to tap into kind of some of the local flair, spices, things like that, and be doing some kind of crazy, weird beers to tap into that, you know, other 2% of the market that is the people who like, you know, sour, smoky, whatever, incredibly hoppy, high alcohol, whatever it might be.
People that go to beer craft.
Yeah, people that go to beer craft.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so a big part of our intentions, our ambitions, is to really, you know, be experimenting with all the ingredients that can be used locally grown. India's got a variety of things that could really make for tremendous beers. You know, obviously on the fruit side, we're known for the mangoes, right? And so mangoes during season are extremely abundant. I think it could be a very interesting ingredient. You know, the neem tree. It's not something that many people in the U.S. are familiar with, but it is a standard component of most Ayurvedic medicines. It's actually in all forms in India, you know, going from oils to oral supplements. I mean, there's the Ayurvedic industry really believes strongly in its medicinal properties. And it has a very unique bitterness property that could be a very nice complementary bitterness to traditional hop bitterness.
I like where you're taking this. Beer as medicine. That is good.
Exactly right.
And you know, I know a lot of Ayurvedic yoga people in New York City who don't drink. So maybe this would give them an excuse to have a beer.
Boo.
That's right. That's the market we're going for. And you know, and other ingredients, jaggery. So jaggery, if anyone's familiar with it, you know, it's an unrefined sugar made from coconut and dates and sugar cane. That could be a very, you know, it could be a very interesting additional ingredient for it. So, to your point, absolutely, we want to use some local ingredients. We want to show people that this is much more than your traditional, you know, watered down lager that you're getting from the big brands in India. So, I think there's a lot of opportunity for fun here.
Cool, that sounds really cool. And I mean, I would be shameful if I didn't ask this, but being the placement of the brewery, you guys had better make a killer IPA.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, everyone asks that question. Let me say something about that. So obviously we all know how IPA got its
name.
Sure. And that's not a story that is really that favorably viewed in India. The British taking these beers that were, you know, excessively hopped for an antimicrobial on the voyage to India during the imperial times is not really something that I think is going to be, you know, a story that people are going to feel good about.
No.
So me and James and a lot of the guys were saying, you know what, there's India Pale Ale, and but there's never been an Indian Pale Ale, Indian with an N. Oh. And I'm very curious as to what we could do with that. I mean, the market is so large in India, there is nothing that says we need to hold with standard style types. We can do a variety of things. We've got our own market, and we're gonna grow the craft beer industry in India is gonna grow in a very different way than it did in the United States. We have no idea how that's gonna be, but there's gonna be styles that emerge from this tremendous revolution that we can't envision today, and that's exciting.
Man,
that is really exciting.
Man, you are wound up about this. That's awesome. You got some fire in that.
So, Avanish.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, you know, you don't have the pleasure of meeting my partner, who is the brewer, Shaley Bist. Is the brewer of Independence Brewing Company. I'm the business guy. And, you know, one of the reasons we're so excited about this and one of the reasons we're able to bring on partners like Greg from Stone is the reason that it's because of, you know, this is a business that's built to be much larger than just...
Wait, Avanish, excuse me for 1 minute. Who's your partner from Stone?
A guy by the name of Greg Cook.
Oh, so this is like an international effort. This is kind of serious. So Greg Koch from Stone. Is he your partner? Is he your advisor? What is he? Everything?
He's everything. He's an investor. He's a partner. He's an advisor. And Greg's not one to pull his punches on the advice he gives. And we are certainly, you know, the beneficiary of his wisdom and, you know, his position in the U.S. craft beer industry. And so, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here, and we want to do it right. We want to make sure we get out, you know, products that really, you know, spur what craft beer can be. And that's the goal. That's the goal of what we're doing.
That's really cool. You know, I think you made a really great point there by comparing the Indian market to the American market. You are kind of working from a blank slate here, so you have the ability to rewrite all of the rules, very much like the American market. When the American craft beer revolution happened, it was a blank slate. What do we have? You know, what was our competition? Fizzy yellow lager. So I mean, you're poised to make a huge impact here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that obviously we want to leverage everything that's been learned from history on the U.S. side. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. But at the same time, you know, my personal view is the craft beer space is about the people. It's about the people drive this. And therefore, no two markets are going to be the same. But there is a tremendous amount of learning that we can leverage from what the U.S. has really pioneered in this space. And people like Greg will certainly be helpful in that regard, but other partners in India will certainly take that in very different directions. And, you know, how we're going to look in 5 years is probably going to be very different from how we're expecting to look in year one. So the future is very exciting.
All right. Avnish, one more thing before we sign off. So, again, the word you gave, it's the Yavira, or the – what's the word for beer that you use in Indian, in Hindi?
It's you know, honestly, I think it's just called beer. I don't know if anyone's using it. So
it's not going to be labeled as Yavira or Yavasura that's on your website. The mild intoxicating drink made of barley.
That is Sanskrit. That's not Hindi. That's Sanskrit. We're talking about, I mean, that's the equivalent of Latin, right? So that in India. So that's, we're talking, you know, centuries ago. No one uses that word to describe beer today. And in fact, and when you talk about beer today, I mean, people are referencing, you know, a lot of traditional styles you're getting in the U.S. and Europe. I mean, keep in mind, India is global enough where a lot of people who work in there are from Europe or from the United States, you know, and these are U.S. American managers at centers and offices in Bombay who are taking their teams out to show them what a porter tastes like. So, you know, the historical side of India remains to be seen how that's going to be incorporated in all of this, but, India is playing catch-up to where everybody else is currently in the craft beer space.
All right. Avnish, thanks so much for calling in. We're really going to keep an eye on you. Tell us, what's the website that gives us more information?
Independence Brew Co. Is the website. Follow us on Facebook at Indie Brew Co., I-N-D-E, Brew Co., all one word, and follow myself on Twitter at Ava Valunky. And you can keep up to speed on everything that's going on in India.
And where are you right now? Are you in India?
I'm in Boston.
Boston? Dude, we set up this interview just to so you could wake up and... Oh, come on, man.
I mean, I flew here from San Francisco. Shaley's in Pune. It's 4 a.m. his time, and he's nicely tucked in his bed. I guarantee you that.
All right. I bet if he's a good brewer, he's still brewing. So he brews, you brew around the clock in India, don't you?
No. That's right. Absolutely. All right.
Avnish, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by the Dead Stars on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned.
Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. On January 29th, we caught up with Norman Sinclair, the owner of Orkney Brewery in Scotland at St. Andrew's, at St. Andrew's Restaurant and Bar in Midtown Manhattan during a party celebrating the release of Skull Splitter on draft here in the United States. We'll share a little bit of this conversation. Listen to us here on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here at St. Andrew's Bar in Midtown Manhattan with Orkney's Skull Splitter, the brewer Norman Sinclair, all the way from Scotland. What a great night it is. You've got people in Viking caps, and the guys from St. Killian's having a party. But we really want to know more about you and your life, the beers that you've made, and what it's like brewing in Scotland. So, Norman, take it away. Tell us about brewing and your whole life.
Yeah, I'm originally from Orkney, right where the brewery is. I'm in a small area on the West Mainland called Quailoo. The brewery's in an old school that dates back to 1876, where a lot of my father went to school there, my grandfather, the head teacher back at the early turn of the century was a relation of mine. So there's a lot of heritage there. I purchased the Orkney Brewery in 2006 when it was in a very, very poor state of everything, financially, finished, building-wise, completely finished, and I rescued it for the island. The whole scenario was, the company prior to me had created some very good brands. And what was going to happen was, and I can't name any names, but certain big companies were going to buy the brands and close the brewery down. Nobody was interested in the bloody brewery. You know, that wasn't it. They were interested in the brands. So, you know, there was a group. I'm the sole owner. There's nobody else involved. But, you know, a couple of people connected with me, one being Karen Scholes. We wanted to rescue the brewery and keep it on the island. The provenance of the whole product is lost. You take it down south and brew it mass-produced. And this is happening with a lot of products, not only the beer industry, but, you know, people want to know that your beer is actually from Orkney, you know, and it's handcrafted. So you're saying, why? Yeah, it was to really not to rescue the whole thing and keep it on the island for generations. I bought the brewery, as I said, in 2006, and we had a plan, one, to rescue it, and then to create a first class facility for brewing and for visitors. And it's just, brewery tours are okay. I mean, I've been on dozens, and I suppose you people on this station have been on loads of brewery tours. Go in and see a stainless steel tank, you got a sample, dad's happy, the wife's bored, the kids are driving everybody nuts. But I think in this day and age, we have to really, really concentrate on the whole family visit. We spent a lot of time considering children. We have a children's trail within the brewery. The children come in, they get a Victorian jotter with all a route within the brewery to go to all places to stamp the jotter, and they're asked questions and they have to answer the questions about whether it was in the Victorian times to do with school, etc. Ultimately, what the children are on is a trail to find the corncrake footprint. Now, the corncrake is a very, very, very rare bird. It's found in Orkney and the Western Isles of Scotland. The bird is a very secretive bird. And I'll just give you a bit of a laugh. In 2009, about a week before we were to start the project, I get a call from Edinburgh RSPB, which is the Royal Society of Prevent, whatever, to do with birds. And they said that there had been a corn crake spotted in the marshes where we have our settlement ponds, and that could we stop the project for about 6 months. And of course, I knew nothing about this bird, and I thought it was a complete bloody wind-up. So I then spoke to various people and said, oh, this is deadly serious, Norman. You've got a corn crake, you can't make noise, you can't do anything. But anyway, we were lucky, the bird flew away and disappeared. And we got the project underway. I've done many projects to do with restaurants, hotels and that, but I really, really pulled the stops out in this one. We've created something that is totally unique. I knew all the heritage back about the school, and I posted some posters in local shops for memorabilia to do with the school. Lo and behold, 100 people were still alive or more that actually attended the school that closed in 1960. They all formed a major group to collect items for me. And we have stuff going right back to the day the school opened in 1876. We have the old original whistle that called the children in. We have the strap. You might not know what the strap is out here, but it's a bloody thick belt that gives you a good hiding over the hand. We have that. We have pictures galore going right back to day one. We have wartime pictures. We have so much memorabilia that it just was coming from every direction in the middle of the construction, and I could hardly cope with the amount of stuff that was coming in. And
Norman, in the UK, do you sell your beers in cask, bottles, kegs? You know, what's the market like over there?
Okay. Primarily, our business is, revolves from cask beer. We produce each brew we do, it's a 30-barrel brew plant. Mm-hmm. It's 120 casks, 9 gallons, which is somewhere around 41 litres or something. Cask beer is what we really are about. We are also one of the largest bottlers of bottled ales in Scotland. We supply just about everybody that sells bottled ale in Scotland. Dark Island's number two in Scotland in the ale. Has been for many years. We don't really do keg beer. The scene in Scotland, a lot of guys now in the brewing industry are doing keg beer, being pulled by hand pull. Yeah, you heard me correctly. Yeah, you put the beer in a keg, link it up to hand pull, and that's cask beer. Well, sorry, not in my mind, but I don't want to get into an argument with anybody about it. You know, it's everyone to their own. We don't do it. We do a couple of kegs.
I mean, it's like a fake cask. So you're saying they put it in a keg system with the CO2, and then they pull it, or a nitro, to make it look like a cask? Is that what you're saying? I've never heard of this.
They only do CO2 to push it up through the pump. The CO2 does not go into the actual beer. It's still real ale. It's just a different format of doing it. But, you know, it isn't. It's fairly controversial. We do keg beer. We do keg beer for a certain reason. We supply all the North Isles ferries. Now, you kind of have cask beer on a ferry with it moving all the time, or you'll have cloudy beer. So we filter Dark Island for that. Our flagship beer is not really Skull Splitter. It is Dark Island. Dark Island's a huge beer in Scotland, UK, Europe. It's been about the brewery. It started brewing in 1988. I should have said that at the beginning. It would have made sense. But we started in 1988, a long time before my time. But Dark Island is a big, big brand now over in Scotland. It's a dark beer, 4.6, very chocolatey. But Skull Splitter is very important to us as well.
How did this style come about, and how did you get the name for this beer?
Well, simple answer. It was named after a famous Viking. It was all named before I purchased the brewery. So I'm not the clever person behind it who created the name. But as I said earlier, it's a barley wine, 8.5. And it's had great success in the UK. It's won Champion Winter Beer of Britain with Camera. You've all heard of Camera, Campaign for Real Ale. And it's just one of these beers that everybody in the beer scene seems to know. Primarily, I would say, Skull Splitter ends up in every beer festival in the UK. Out here, it's been coming out here, I guess, for 20 to 25 years in bottle format to many, many states out here, all over. Sales have been good. It's growing and growing and growing. And our importers have been at me for years since I took over to do it in draft form. We have a huge social media following. I mean, nobody would believe that the cult following behind this beer. It's just from every state. And the biggest laugh you have with this is there are so many folk out here related to Skull Splitter. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And God knows how they find this information out, but we take them all dead serious. It's deadly serious stuff, this. It's Skull Splitter. We respond to every email that we get overnight, and they are a lot. And I think we're in for a hell of a lot more soon.
Cheers to that.
Absolutely.
All right, hey. That was our good buddy Norman Sinclair of Orkney Brewery. As you can tell, we talked to him for about 2 hours one day about a month ago in Midtown Manhattan, and he had a lot to say. It was a great time. But the big thing is he had people dressed up as Vikings running around. And, you know, Scotland gets it. He also is a big fan of whiskey. So we're happy to be part of this great international beer community. But, Ben, have you had it's a Skull Splitter.
Skull Splitter, yeah.
From Orkney. Have you had it before?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I've had Skull Splitter. I've had the Dark Island. They've both been in the shop. Dark Island came and went, and then came back. But Skull Splitter has been one. Just like he said, it's got like kind of a cult following in the U.S. Very much.
Well, there's a guy named Lars. He's working at St. Killian's Importers. He's bringing a lot of these beers. He imports the Orkney. He also imports our friends from Lebanon too. So. He's out there doing a lot of cool things. All right. Hey, got to say that we're going to give a few sign-offs before we close out. It's been an interesting show. I'd like to thank all of you for coming in tonight. I'll give a quick shout-out again to Blind Bat Brewery on Long Island. They're offering a new membership. You can check it out, blindbatbrewery.com. It's a unique way to help support their expansion. And just a little update, our former guest, John Conzilla, his Kickstarter campaign did hit their numbers. They're trying to revitalize Long Island hop farming. You can still go check out goodbrazil.com. You can still contribute money. Ben, anything else you want to say about your new small brewery that you're putting in at Beercraft?
Yeah, it's really cool, and come check it out.
All right. And Heidi from Most Fun, what's coming up for you? It's special events and pairing beer and food or anything?
We're actually pairing up with you over at Food Karma with the New York City hot sauce event. I just got a little information about it tonight, April 20th through 21st. So come and try some Mongolitsa pork and hot sauce, an amazing product there. And we're going to be partnering with them as well throughout the year. And you can buy Mongolitsa pork at mostfund.com as well.
All right. And James, anything else about Independence Brewing in India?
Looking at a mid-July opening. So that's it. That's it right now.
So people should start making plans and get into India this summer.
Yes, because the flights are going to be hectic.
All right.
Or the Hot Sauce Festival.
Hey, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio, supported by the Good Beer Seal. And, wrong page, guys. Here we are. All right. Thanks so much to everybody. Heidi, James, Ben, Avanish. Thanks for supporting Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll see you next time. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.